What are the top 10 Stephen King adaptations?
Stay tuned to the end to find out what makes the Rushmore.
Hey, screeners, how you doing? It's me, the one AJ, Anthony Jordan.
And me, Nico Liro, getting into the swing of spooky Halloween season now.
Indeed, indeed. And who else than one who is revered in the name of spookiness? Not that everything that he's done is spooky, but we are talking about the one and only Stephen King. Some films you are very familiar with Stephen King's, some will shock you that they're Stephen King's. Either way, the silver screen dudes are going to be giving you their personal top 10s of what we appreciate in Stephen King. But before I go into that, and before we do start talking movies, Nico, would you like to tell everyone what the movie Mount Rushmore is all about?
Yes, it's basically a weekly top 10 show in our sixth season now between two best friends from school. Here's how the show works. AJ, sorry, I just got distracted there because StreamYard has just announced a new video backgrounds and now supported in the studio. That's got my creative juices flowing. And we're back in the room. Each week, pick a topic, we go our separate ways, and we come right back here into our little video podcast and deliver to you, our film familia, the Silver Screen Dudes, our individual top 10s. This week, AJ will go first, delivering his bottom three. I will then deliver my bottom three. AJ will deliver his next two. I will deliver my next two. And then when we get to our top five, we will trade one apiece. If at any time while we are rounding off our individual top 10 list, one person has a movie in a high position, the person will say,
punt.
And we will punt and talk about that movie when we get to the high position. Once we have both rounded off our individual top 10s, we will create the movie Mount Rushmore. These are the four quintessential diverse must-see movies of the genre, which this week is...
Top 10 Stephen King adaptations. Movies, not TV series, before anyone gets into it. Okay, now, what happens once we, the screeners, have delivered to you... We, the Silver Screen Dudes, have delivered to you, the screeners... The official top 10. It gets even harder because you have to crown El Capitan, El Numero Uno, the best of the best of the best, with honors, sir. And to quote Alada, in the end, there can be only one. Now, how do you crown the one? Well, that's pretty simple. You take the four films that made the Rushmore, you head on over to @MovieMTRushmore, the official X page of the Silver Screen Dudes. Or more importantly, @WeLoveMovies, the official, @MoviePulseU, the official page of We Love Movies, headed by good old JT. And there you will see the film and you will cast your vote. Last week, our topic was?
Last week, our topic was the top 10, this is a ranking of people, the best actors who played multiple comic characters.
And our contenders were?
Michael Keaton, Nick Cage, Josh Brolin, and Aaron Taylor-Johnson.
Right, I'm going to play because I was that ignorant person last week, and I said I'm going to be arrogant, so I'm going to go for it now. In fourth place, I am going for Josh Brolin.
Nope.
Yeah, if it was an old season, you would have heard a swear word. Okay, ATJ.
Yeah. Annihilated. 6%.
I didn't think it would be that bad. Okay.
Yeah, he's just above Coach Carter and James Wan.
Okay. This guy is Marmite. But I think screeners love him more. So I'm going to go with Nick Cage at number two. I'm going to go with Josh Brolin at number three.
Nope.
Okay, Nick Cage.
Yep, Nick Cage at number two with 14%.
This is going to bite me in the rear if I'm wrong on this one. There's a smile on his face that I'm not liking. I don't care because I know the love that Michael Keaton has as Batman. I'm going to try it one last time. Josh Brolin was in the number two.
Yes. Josh Brolin came at two. Only 16%. Michael Keaton.
Smashed it.
I think this is the highest ever we've had. 64%.
Ooh, it could
this
well
was
be.
A demolition derby.
Yeah, that could well be. That could be a steamroller. Bird Boy wins it. Whether he's Batman, whether he's Birdman, whether he's Vulture, he delivers.
Okay. The winged apparitions, he does
yeah,
well.
Yeah, indeed.
Right, let's get into it, AJ.
Right, let's get into it. So, like, you might as well just have your finger on the punt button straight away, because I know all around the globe I'm going to be hated for this. But in at number 10 for me is The Shining.
Sorry, did you hit the wrong button and say the wrong thing?
Nope.
Well, yeah, that would be a punt.
Cool.
That's along fine. With a lot of judgment. What the hell?
We will get into it when we get into it, because that's the rules of the game, right? And now you're going to be like, how did this film become number 9? And technically, I'll get into
that's going to be the case for every movie you mention until we get very high. I'm just putting that spoiler out.
Listen,
there,
I know you're number 1 without even going any further, so I know
obviously.
You're number 1. Right. Okay. In at number 9 is Cujo. Now, I know Cujo, that's probably not made your list, but if it did,
it just missed out. I actually really enjoy Cujo.
So here's the thing. I remember, and I've not watched. Okay, here's the God's honest truth. I remember watching Cujo as a kid, and I was like, my God, this mad dog that is just trapping people, and it's the biggest level of rabies. For some reason, I pictured a different dog. I you thought said, it was
it's Beethoven.
But this is the thing. When I was like, is Beethoven gone bad? And I can't remember. I think we've done movie dogs.
AJ, it's Batoven.
Literally. I was a bit shocked, and I think I started to watch it again, but I was just a bit shocked. I was like, ooh, I don't know if I'm ready for that. But it still works. So I it's been a while since I've seen it again, but from muscle memory, it might have been a lot higher if I had watched it again now. But as a kid, I remember being all kinds of freaked out by this. Like, I was like, this dog is bad, and who can stop him? And you got someone just trapped in a car, and you're like, this is a bad dog. Like, we do you remember the other, not too long ago, we done movie dogs, and it was all about good doggy? This is the bad doggy.
He's a bad dog. Bad dog. It's Jaws in a car with a dog. That's literally what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very contained, but it works. And I enjoy it. But I need to be revisited.
Cujo's a lot of fun. They did an amazing job training the dog, man. Like, because the dog.
You know what? Now that you stop to think about that aspect of it, hell yeah.
Like, respect to that Saint Bernard, because he went in on that car, man. Like, yo. Weren't no animatronics there. That's a well-trained doggo. He's a good doggo playing a bad doggo.
Give that doggo an Oscar.
Give that doggo the golden biscuit.
The golden bone. The golden bone.
Still probably have more value than the Golden Globes. Fact. Come at me. Fact. No, it's a fun movie. It's typical Stephen King fare, isn't it? Small white picket fence, little suburban town. Things go wrong. Seen it all before. It's Stephen King's wheelhouse. But it's fun.
Cool. This one might be in similar territory or might be a punt as well. Again, people are going to feel like I don't know how to judge Stephen King films. First time watch for me this week. Last week, whatever. It's The Girl Whose Prom Went All Kinds of Wrong. Carrie.
I'll share something with you. It's a first time watch for me too, from beginning to end at least, and it is my number 9.
Okay. So my take on it is, now don't get me wrong, sometimes I hate when people, I don't want to say overhype a film, but the ending is so well known that it's, you're watching the film just waiting for it to happen. And I feel that is the downside to it, because it sounds so weird to compare it to this. I'm doing this more on the book than the film. Matilda uses her telekinesis throughout the movie or throughout the book. We're aware that Carrie has it, and we see like the bullying that happens very early on when she starts menstruation and she's not familiar with it all. And it's this weird kind of bullying that you don't picture would happen. Like, I know people can be all kinds of evil or what have you. And I know she's very protected, so very unaware of what the human body will do. But I felt like we just had this story of people out to get the most innocent girl in the school, which happens in a lot of films. And it was
It's like what Yul Brynner says in Cool Runnings, we're different. People are always afraid of what different, right?
Yeah.
It's simple as that.
And that is that. And it purely it is that. And I watched it and I think it's just that what happened in terms of her power, which we've just learned to explain, it just happens at the end. And don't get me wrong, the film does continue after that, but it felt like we had this whole build-up of people trying to get to her, and then it all just happens, bing, bang, bang, like the prom scene, she goes back home, X, Y, Z happens, film done. And I just felt like, I don't know what I was looking for, but I was just looking for a bit more in the build-up to it, as opposed to people just randomly like, we're going to get Carrie. I can't stand Carrie. Carrie nearly made me lose my thing. How dare the teacher say I'm not allowed to go to the prom? It's all because of Carrie. And I just felt like it just needed a bit more depth in the build-up. I'm not saying I needed to see her telekinesis more, because maybe for her to realise what she's done, that she owns, and then really go...
Well, she did. The whole film was about that, wasn't it? It was about her going to the library, learning about telekinesis. She tested it out on a few people. You know, she used it on her mum before the party.
Yes. Yeah, true.
There were instances of her using it. But no, I take your point. And this is where I've often had an issue with Stephen King's writing, and not just with the adaptations, but the books themselves. There's a lot of things that you're just meant to kind of take for granted.
Yeah.
You know, for some people it works, and some people interpret that as, you know, the unknown being the big fear. But for me, it's like, well, the thing about what I've always had an issue with is that he never delves into the unknown. He very much tells you it's this, but then just doesn't really develop it.
I think I can agree with that. I think I will agree with that a lot. Yeah. That's
always been my profound issue with Stephen King. There is no sense of unknown. There's no like, how did this happen? You are literally just asked to take things for at face value, and then they don't get developed much. And this is another case. What's interesting, I think, above everything, you look at who directed this, Brian De Palma. And he opened the floodgates, because this was the first ever Stephen King book that was adapted into film.
Yes.
And the rest is history. So in that sense, it's definitely important and deserving of being on the list. And I do say Sissy Spacek was so good as
she's
Carrie.
Awesome. She's awesome. That like it's just a lack of depth. That's honestly my beef with it. Aside from that, the film's brilliant. I feel had it not had the hype of Carrie in the prom, and I just watched it on a face value, which it was hard because of the hype. It comes down to, I think I can liken it more than anything else, the Sixth Sense. When someone has told you, I see dead people, you're just like it's there, and that's kind of what I felt this film had.
It is there.
They
do build the set. I mean, just like yourself, I knew what was coming, but they did build the tension well, you know, the way that they were very slowly panning up to that bucket of blood, the way that everything that was like, slow, breathe, take your time. I really loved her performance, though. This capturing this innocence and then having to go full demon. It was like, I like what you've done here. See, it's good. It's really good. But you know, very 70s, very like that type of death, very, very melodramatic, very Adam Copeland. If you know, you know.
If you know, you know. What was I gonna say? I am intrigued to see the remake, and I know it's on Prime as well, so I may check that out. Did you get a chance to see it at all?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I do want to check that out.
Although it is one of the books where, you know, Stephen King has never made... I mean, I don't know where he stands on religion, but I get the impression from his scriptures that he's not the biggest fan. you know, the way he depicts religion in his novels, if he is religious in any way, then he's a hypocritical mofo, ain't he? God for a buck. And if he's anti-religion and you told me that, I'd be like, yeah, I believe you.
I'm going to come back to that statement later on, because I feel like he kind of professes it quite a bit in a film that we will talk about much later on.
Well, there's another film we're going to talk about, I'm sure, later on, which where he goes quite hard in on religion.
Okay.
We'll get there. I don't know where he stands on it. I'm sure there's oodles of information online, but I don't get the impression that he's a fan.
Right.
So that was your 8, yeah?
Yes, over to you, sir.
All right, my number 10, not the trashy remake, but the original, It.
No, so you see, I've not. I think I've seen it. I'm pretty sure I've seen it, but then I've got a feeling it was a TV series I saw, and I'm just
TV movie.
Maybe that's what it was then. So I have seen it, but it is donkeys since I've seen it. So it didn't actually make the list.
So what I liked about it, in a nutshell, was Tim Curry. He's so good as Pennywise. I actually, like, he's so menacing and playful at the same time. And that's, you know, Tim, quintessential Tim Curry. I loved what he did with this role. And I thought this was such a good adaptation of what King's book is. I have read it, the big freaking tome that it is, and it's, I wasn't a big fan of it, but anyway. This I thought was a lot more true to form than the remake. And at least this one, the one thing this one didn't have, which is a good thing, was an inconsistent tone. At least this one, it's like, no, we're going to go kind of cheesy B-movie horror level, and there'll be some creepiness to it. We're never going to go full scares on this. And it worked. It really, really worked for me.
During our news show last week, we talked about Spawn and being way too young to have seen a film. Me and It were way too young when that came out. I shouldn't have seen it, but I remember seeing it. Like, I know that. And it worked. It worked. So I like respect to it. But for some reason, I thought it was a TV series, which is weird because I didn't think I tuned in weekly. But yeah, makes a lot of sense. It was a TV movie.
Okay. Yeah. And you, yeah, I can see where if you're freaked out by clowns, I can see where you would have got that from. So yeah, It was my 10. Carrie, which we've just discussed, is my 9. My 8 might be a punt. It's one I've recommended to you before. My first of 3 Stephen King movies adapted by Frank Darabont. I'm going to talk about The Mist.
It's just missed the list, bro. I'm not going to lie. It was not available.
Wasn't a fan?
No, viewing. Just off the list of viewing, because it wasn't available on the streams. Like, yeah. When you have to start going on a deep sea dive. Like, there are two films on my list. I won't bring them up because I don't know. The Mist is one of them, and then there's another one that it's still on my, now that I'm on there, I'm like, I want to watch them sooner than later. Because, yeah. And The Mist, you know what's funny about The Mist? I wasn't sure if you were pro The Mist or anti The Mist, but either way, I was like, I need to see The Mist, but I didn't get to see it.
I saw The Mist, I think it was this year or last, it's very recent, where we were talking about like OMFG endings or something like that. And this one, I mean, obviously we had to reveal spoilers there.
Now I remember what you said.
I was like, I'm entertained because you're not trying to be reinvent the wheel, you know. For 99% of this movie, up until the ending, you are literally a very self-aware, albeit very entertaining, kind of B-movie, creature feature horror movie. And it works. You don't have a big budget, so what do? You hide the creatures in the mist. Very good. When we see the creatures, are they threatening? Yes. Are they going to make me have nightmares? Probably not, but I'm going to be entertained by it. And then the ending happens, and you're like, sorry, this movie just went from perfectly passable 6 out of 10 entertaining to freaking 8 out of 10 territory. That ending, what the hell? Like, flip a movie on its head, why don't you?
Talk about a
universal truth about a mistake that a human being can make if he'd waited 5 more minutes. Like, oh my God. Like,
I remember this ending.
And it's one of those things I feel like if I went back and watched, it would be that much more impactful knowing what's coming, hearing the wheels of the treads of the tanks turning and stuff. It's like, oh God, it hurts so much more now. Like,
yeah. Interesting. I do need to see this film. I do.
The Mist is fantastic. And it's because of that ending that tricks you into, you know, the movie, which is meant to be just, as I said, it's a B-movie creature feature, and then all of a sudden, it's not. It just messed with you in a hardcore way, like, ah, oh, yes, movie! Go on, Frank Darabont.
Nice. Cool. I wish. I wish I'd seen it, but it is on my list of stuff to see. So that's your number eight, yeah? My number seven, available on Netflix. So it's actually a Netflix movie. It's actually been on my list of films to see for a while because I've seen someone watch it and I remember going out and I was like, this is kind of intriguing. Gerald's Game.
All You.
Have you seen it?
Nope.
Okay. So this this one would have been a lot higher if the principal... You know, there's, you know me already. When there's a certain twist, it's just going to do me.
Yes, we are best friends, but yes.
Yeah. So this one is really interesting, the way it starts off, and it's very much self-contained in terms of a film, is that you've got this couple who have gone off on a holiday. I think it's a holiday home, from what I understand, because they seem to know the neighbours really well. And they're looking to spice it up, so they're kind of playing like they're different characters or what have you. And the husband is into something that the wife is not into. And basically, I'm going to pull up the poster again. Come again? No, it's not that one. He's into some kinky stuff. So in order to spice it up, he ties her, he handcuffs her to the bed. And the handcuffs are like professional ones. So it's like, you can't just like snap them. So four poster bed, both arms connected to it, two posters of it. And that's that. He starts getting into it because it's like a rape fantasy. She's not into it and like kicks off. But while doing that, he's still trying to like persuade her. He's like, but you wanted to spice things up. Here we are doing it. And now you're not into it. He goes back onto her and in the process has a heart attack. Yes. Exactly. He has a heart attack and she's just about able to kick him off. And as she does that, he's on the bed and falls off of the bed, smack, and now you're starting to see blood pour from his head. So now she is screwed.
Well, screwed. She's in a hotel, yes?
No, it's a holiday home. It's a home, but it's like pretty secluded. And he even says it, you can scream, no one will hear you. Like the neighbors are away. It looks like, what bugged me when they'd done a cutaway scene, it looks like the house next door is just next door, but he does say, you could scream, no one's going to hear you. And like the cleaners and the gardener, they've done everything. So they're not going to be here. They're, you know, this is our weekend. That was what he had said before.
Okay, so I mean, look, the way I break that down is she'd just have to survive the weekend then. She'd be just very thirsty after.
Right. Maybe it was a bit longer. I can't remember what it was. But yeah, it was. It's now a situation of, can she survive? Dare I say, I forgot to mention, there was this dog that she, a stray dog that she fed earlier, and that dog has now made its way to the house, and now she's obviously seeing this dog trying to eat away at her now deceased husband. And through all of this, it's a case of, is psychosis taking over? Because you see a part where her dead husband is now standing and talking about the accident she should have done. They start delving into her past. There's another vision of her. At one point, you think, very early in the film, so it's not a spoiler, you think she's broken apart, but no, it's her vision. So there are different conversations of different versions and stuff. It's a really good film. What I didn't enjoy is where there's this spin of a character who just doesn't need to be in there. Now, I think it was based on a true story.
Oh, I hate to do that.
But you've got this character who's just randomly in the film, but doesn't have enough depth to be in it. But he's like this serial killer who collects bones and stuff like that. And I'm just like, this is the part of Stephen King that I don't enjoy, you know? And I feel like where you had this very good psychological thriller going on, this character who's now just involved in it, and it's like, is it a figment of our imagination? Is it real? Then it kind of plays into something, but I feel like it wasn't needed. And for that, that's why it's just lower than it. It could have been a lot higher had it not been for that character, if I'm honest, but.
Interesting. Yeah. No, okay. The premise sounds really good, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
Your number six.
Not groundbreaking, but definitely worth a watch.
Yeah, my number six, fun. It's worth a watch.
Yeah. My number six has come up quite, I think we both forgot about it, and now, well, I forgot about it. I think it might have been new to you. Now it seems to come up quite often in the world of films for us. 1408.
Oh, hell yeah. That's my number seven. Let's do it.
Oh, perfect. Let's see. Perfect. Sorry, let me just get this image back up. Oh, yeah, there we are. Make sure you download us on Spotify, guys, if you've got friends who are into pod. This is aside from the fact that I was able to predict a way of getting out of this room, I really really enjoy the concept of it. You're talking about a man who, John Cusack's character, who just follows different news stories and hauntings and stuff. And there's this infamous hotel that has the infamous room 1408 where nobody has come out alive, and it's meant to be haunted. And he's challenged to just survive a night in 1408, and can he do it? And you have the very, very creepy concierge that is Samuel L. Jackson along the way, who keeps popping in along the way. And while you would believe that, hey, it's just a room and it won't be there, he goes in very, you know, unbelieving, cynical. Like,
yeah,
the ultimate cynic. It's just, yeah, I will be able to survive this night. And gradually, it starts to get deeper and deeper. Stuff starts to happen, and it starts to play tricks. Stuff happened in the room. Is it going to happen? He thinks he can escape the room. He thinks he's out of the room. Then he finds he's back in the room. It just gets more and more of a mind F. Again, if this was another season, I would have said another word. But yeah, it goes all kinds of crazy. And I enjoy the challenges.
Yeah.
It's the kind of trippy that I enjoyed. Without, as I said, there was one way I was like, I know how to get out of that room. It ended up being the way to get out of the room. And that's the only thing that bugged me, because I'm like, just do that. So that was the only thing that's always bugged me with 1408. But the build-up, I think, is amazing.
Yeah, so what I'd add to that is that I, unlike you, I think you had one of your Veers moments. I definitely hadn't clocked how to get out the room. And that's partly because I'm dumb, but also partly because the movie really got its claws in on me. Like, it's for such a what is a baseline, a stupid as hell premise, like an evil room, like, what, my god, do you buy into it quickly? It's very effective.
Sorry, that was totally me. Apologies.
What I say above everything, it is so creepy. Like, the sound choices they make, the creaks, the glass, the crinkles, the flushing of toilets, all these very, very highly relatable everyday sounds that get used in a way that even if it was you in your home, if you heard that, you'd be like, uh-uh, why is that happening?
Yeah.
It's stuff that you know could happen and that you wouldn't want to happen in your household. And I love it when horror does that, where it's like, this could be you. You ever been at home and heard a creaking board, knowing no one else is at home? Spooked you a bit? Mm-hmm. Exactly. Houses make noise, buddy. It's like, yeah, they do, don't they? Rooms make noise too. God, this room's evil. Get me out.
Yeah, things that go bump in the night. It really plays on that. It really
does. Yeah, it's great. And it's very hard for someone like myself who consumes a lot of horror to watch, especially an old horror movie, which usually has to rely on old tricks, for it to creep me the way it did. There were literally moments, because I was just watching it on my phone one night, where I felt myself pulling the cover up. I was like, no, 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 leave now, leave now. Like, the part that, there was a part where I was like, yeah, this is exactly how I'm feeling right now. Because John Cusack, you know, he is the ultimate cynic in this. His whole career is literally going and debunking
disproven, isn't it?
Those stories. Yeah, disproven, right? It's that point where he realizes that the room is flubbed up and he just grabs his stuff and goes, nope, and leaves. And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, that was me 10 minutes ago, bro. Why are you still here? You went in the toilet, you put the toilet seat down, you came back, the toilet seat was up, leave. Like, that ain't your mind playing tricks on you. That happened. Leave. Like,
nah, it's a good film. It's a very good film.
It really is. And you know when you're so not expecting anything and don't know what something's about that you go in and you're so pleasantly surprised? This is that for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was your six, yeah?
Yep, it was indeed.
Also my seven, and my six. Oh, my six is definitely a pun, but it's Misery.
It's your what?
Six.
Six. Well, it's my number five.
Oh, I thought it'd be higher for you. Okay.
So here's the funny thing about Misery. Original viewing.
Where he's bashing religion, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. 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 You're not wrong. My initial viewing of Misery was as a kid, and Kathy Bates shook me up something rotten in that. She was vicious, vicious. I was like, ooh, like I had the creeps. And it really, everything that happens through it, the batter and everything, like just literally capturing. It's the story of a writer who has a car crash and who happens to be picked up by, out of all people, he's absolute
Stan.
biggest fan. Exactly. I was just about to say, your biggest fan, Stan. And she is on this guy's case of wanting to see what comes into his next book. And then it becomes not only just releasing the next book, but now she's upset that it's not going the way she would want it to go. And it's, you are not leaving. You are not doing this until it happens. Like, he has become a prisoner to this woman, like Stan's prisoner, and that's the worst thing you could ever imagine. And yeah, she makes him
To
pay it
build
all.
on that, it's the point where she's reading his last book about Misery, Misery Fontaine, or whatever she's called, that's already published, and she hasn't read it yet. And this character, who she is obsessed with in the book, dies, and man, she goes to town on him.
Like, that's not the way it's supposed to go. Like, yeah, it's all kinds of free. The funny thing is, now I don't know if it's because of the previous trauma. Rewatching it as an adult, it didn't feel as deep. Like, don't get me wrong, she's still an evil person. There's still moments of tension when, something's just slightly out of place, and will she realize it? And you said, like, oh gosh, oh god, oh god, it's coming. You have the build up of it, but it just didn't feel as creepy as it previously did.
No, it didn't. It I'm with you. It didn't creep me out. It's not 1408 level on any way, shape, or form. What it is there's people
Intense.
out there like that.
Yeah, that's a fact. That's a fact. While there may not be a creepy room, there are stalkers who will go to extreme levels. And that's the thing. The film is intense, and it's real. And this is what I've realized with King. Don't give me your supernatural. And I'm in. I'm in. And that's something I've learned. Here's the thing. If you're going in supernatural, I'm all in for it. When you try to mix it, I start to lose it with him. And that's my crux of it. So this
1408
film is just grounded in reality. I'm deep in.
successful. But I'm with you. Like, a lot of the time when he does horror, it makes me go, meh. I'm very, very much with you. But no, you know what? Rewatching this today actually made me realize, yeah, all those people in the world who say there's no reason to hit a woman, yeah, pretty much. Because believe me, I'm on record now. I would beat the living shib out of her if I
We are
got, like,
not. We are not advocating domestic violence.
I'm
However,
advocating violence over the world. I'm advocating
self-defense
violence.
is completely different.
Listen, what he does to her at the end, when he gets the burnt pages and shoves it in her mouth and goes, "Eat it!" I'm like, so much. So much. Like,
Cancellation by the silver screen news, but I know what you mean.
no. I don't give it. If you think this is cancel worthy, go watch Misery. Come back to me, honey.
So that was my number five. You're number five, sir.
I'm advocating domestic violence. I'm advocating violence on Annie Wilkes, though. God damn.
Self-defense.
Self-defense and a bit of vengeful necessity. Eat it. Show you the penis got me. Like,
FPD style.
that's it. My number five. I actually didn't know this was a Stephen King book until I went
I
on
have a
Google and watched.
feeling, I have a feeling it's my number four with that line, because I was shocked. And I said it to my mate John the other day when I found out, and he's like, no, I've got to do my research on that. And I still haven't proven it to him. If it's the same film, I might be wrong, but I'll let you say it and I'll see if it's the same.
Arnold.
Yes. Yeah. I
Arnold,
know.
you're running man, it's so good.
Indeed. Yeah, that's my number four. That is my number four,
You
Lewis.
know,
Yeah.
in the future, we're going to the world where you've got like, it's like a Hunger Games, and they make you do the running, and if you win, you get the money, and then you get the freedom. But to beat the people up in the running man, it's really good.
It's exactly that. Like, do you know what I think helps with The Running Man? And I don't know when the book was written, but it's
I don't care. This is great.
It's great. But you know what I think also made The Running Man that bit more exciting? Especially for our generation. It was like extreme gladiators. You know, yes. We're watching gladiators every day on TV. Now you've got one that's based on it's gladiators where you don't just have the guy blowing the whistle and, you know, you fall into the... I prefer the crash mats than the swimming pool. I'm sorry. I know it hurt people, but I prefer the crash mats. But this one, there's no crash mats. You die. You die in this game. It's a game of survival. Yes, there's Battle Royal. Yes, there's The Condemned. Yes, there's The Hunger Games. The Running Man was my first taste of all of this. The Running Man is my favorite in all of this.
100%. 100%. Yeah. The only thing I think they did wrong, and was also the same thing they did right, was actually casting Arnold. Because he's not a good runner.
Okay, fun fact. Would you like a bit of trivia?
You're going to tell me he was like some varsity athlete runner, right?
No, no, no. Do you know who was meant to be the Running Man?
Please tell me Tom Cruise.
No. Well, ready? And this, it would have been an interesting film all the same. Christopher Reeve.
Oh, that's just f***ed up. Sorry, I shouldn't have said
that. You're good.
That's just bad irony. Like,
oh, gosh, I didn't even... At the time, I was just thinking super... Yeah, oh,
I'm gosh. I'm glad, AJ, that you brought that up. That's so bad.
I'm looking at the pedigree of the actor. Now I'm thinking Chris Rock. Now I'm thinking Chris Rock. What kind of effed up stuff is that? Superman can't walk. What's next? Acrobat drowned in the tub?
Oh, he's like that skit from Eddie Murphy where he's talking about Stevie Wonder. Yo, Stevie, you want to impress me? Take the wheel.
Yes, yeah. I did not read it in that way. R.I.P. Christopher.
The moment you said that, I went, is he joking with me? Or does he not realise what he said?
No, look, at the time, he was a fully abled man. He was meant to be that.
No, I appreciate that, but it's because you started this whole thing by saying, do you want to know what the irony was? And I was like, oh, he's deep, Jesus.
No, yeah, it was the irony of you saying it didn't work as Arnie, but it did. It was like, yes,
yeah,
there was someone
didn't
else.
Come out that way, brother. Jesus Christ.
Apologies to anyone of the, if anyone of the Reeves family has seen that.
Reeves, the Running Man. That does not read well in 2023.
For the Reeves family, it was no disrespect of irony. It's just when we were saying he was not meant to be cast, there was an actual front runner in the great actor that was Christopher Reeve. Yeah.
But so this is the thing. Arnie's not the world's greatest actor by his own admission, and he's not a good runner from what we saw in this. Like that scene where they've got him on tape running away in the airport, and then like, is it Cocteau? No, Cocteau's Demolition Man. But they're the guy who manages the running game, the big villain essentially. He's got that video playing of Arnie running in so much. He's like, hello, you beautiful mother flubber. And it's like, no, he's not. That's not a good runner. Who are you trying to kid? But despite, in that sense, not being a good fit, in the other sense, so good.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, the guy who says, I'll be back is going to be the Running Man. Yes,
yeah, all day. It worked so well.
So well. And the villains in it, Fireball and Dynamo. And it's like, yeah, man, come on. And they had the... the killer freaking ice skater, like the hockey player with the big razor hockey stick. Fun fact, he was the sewer cleaner in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, Turtles in Time. I was like, you got to be a killer? Yes!
Nice.
Oh, I love this film, top to bottom. It's so good. Yeah, I get the Running Man. Yeah. I think it would be a good remake, by the way.
It needs to be done right, because if I remember rightly, Oz from American Pie, he done like it was a rollerblade version of it, and it sucked. You need to get the right cast to make it happen. You need the right person to make it happen. And I have this strange, icky feeling that people would instantly cast Dwayne Johnson, and I don't know if it would work.
Oh, kill me now, don't do it. John Cena, however.
Ooh, Cena I would take. I do not want Vin Diesel anywhere near that film.
Cena, I would watch doing the Running Man, a really violent modern Running Man with John Cena, I would watch in a heartbeat.
But then again, go back to what you said, give us Tom Cruise.
Yeah, so much.
Do you know what, Tom Cruise or Matt Damon? I think I could really enjoy Matt Damon. Clean
cut now. I don't think he'd do something hyper violent, and it needs to be hyper violent.
Nice, yeah.
Cena would. He did Suicide Squad. That thing was violent as hell. Like,
yeah, interesting. Comment below, guys. Who would you cast in the remake of The Running Man?
Yeah, it's a great question. Who would you cast in the remake of The Running Man? And I'm just going to keep putting it out there. John Cena is better than The Rock in every sense. He's a better wrestler. He's a better actor. And he's done better movies. He just has. I don't know how this can be argued.
Yeah. He really does stuff. I know some people don't like those stuff, but like Rock doing Walking Tall, Welcome to the Jungle / The Rundown. Rock had some early stuff that weren't too bad.
Yeah, but
it's got worse. It's progressively got worse.
Walking Tall, The Rundown I really enjoyed. Gridiron Gang I thought was really good. But then, dude, he's doing these movies like San Andreas and Skyscraper and that god-awful Jumanji remake, which people were like, oh, it's really good. It might be better than the original. Shut up.
That was blown smoke. That was blown smoke, man.
Day off, mate. Seriously, sit down, put on the kettle, have a day off.
So that was your 5 and my 4, right?
Yes. So okay, my
press
4.
The punt button. Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
My
4. Yeah, of course.
Might be a punt. Stand by me.
Yes, that is indeed a punt. That is indeed a punt.
Okay. Your number 3?
It's punt time. It's definitely punt time. The Green Mile.
Punt.
I knew it.
Duh.
Trust me, I knew it. Okay, so my number 2, yeah. Sorry, I lost track there.
I just punted your 3.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, I was right. Yeah, I was waiting for you, and it just felt like there was an open gap there. That's why. Is it my turn? Yeah, your turn.
My number 3 was the mega punt from earlier, mate. I still think you're crazy. The Shining.
So here's the thing, I'm gonna put it out there, and I think I said it when I first saw it, and I'll say it again. I've always heard that here is Johnny, and like I thought this film was going to be amazing. Everyone says, like, hey, come play with us, Danny, whatever. I was so disappointed in this film. I can't. And this is why I'm guessing, unless it's your worst, I'm going to bring it up now. I'm aware that King was not a fan of this film.
Correct.
And he was very much a fan of Dr. Sleep, and that's what made me really want to see
that. Stephen King can shut the flub up, because Dr. Sleep sucked.
But I was more intrigued to see Dr. Sleep, and I was very upset I didn't get to see it, because I was like, I might have the same view he does when it comes to this. Going back to what you said, where with King, you just need to accept stuff. I was so disappointed in the way that we are told what The Shining is. It's like this family move in, they meet the concierge on his way out, and it's like, I can see it, Danny. You have what I had. My grandmother used to call it The Shining. Cool. We then move on to try, like, there was no depth to this situation.
Sorry, not telekinesis, telepathy.
Yeah, but that was that, right? And I was like, okay, you've told me what it is. We're going to work on that. What then happens is, and I remember watching it, is that Jack Nicholson is trying to get away from like the world to write a story and what have you. The next scene I see of him, he's just verbally attacking his wife. And you're like, I've not even seen your descent into madness. It's just there. Like, just accept it. And that was just like, huh? Now, maybe that part played on me. And then, come again? But it was just too instantaneous. He was literally just frustrated at his computer.
I'm pretty sure at that part he's already met Lloyd in the bar, right?
But again, that was like a conversation. I think he had a conversation.
Lloyd's not really there.
I can't even.
Lloyd isn't real. That's why you've already seen the descent into madness.
Possibly. But and then what happened? And then everything else, I just didn't. Danny got on my nerves. Got on my nerves.
Kind of the point. Kind of the point.
No, but that murder, like that voice,
Red again. Red Ram!
Again, just. Sorry, I'm an 80s kid. I'm going to say it how it is. Yeah? And maybe it's also a situation. There is no way anyone in my household could have got away with just making that noise without getting one. What the hell are you doing? Like, it was just like, they were just like, what's he doing? It's just, nah, yo. If that was anyhow in my, you know, my dad, bro, there was no way any of us, like, I needed to see certain things. And then the visions and the apparitions, I was like, what is going on? And then when I see that,
people send me Joe from beat the shit out of Danny for red rumming while they sleep.
Listen, bro, I don't even want to get into it.
Christopher Reeve, the child. Jesus
Christ. I'm telling you now, it would have been stop your nonsense, yeah? Followed by, again, my family live by a rule. Those who don't listen must feel. Daddy would have felt before anything else. But all of these situations just didn't work with me. And then when Jack Nicholson was going to hook up with this lady, and then the metamorphosis of what she really was, I was just like, what is going on? And then, I don't want to get into spoiler, but by the time I saw this very... It's a meme at this point now, but him frozen away at the end of it in the maze, it just felt like very thrown together. It just didn't work for me. It just did not work for me. I appreciate the mystique of the picture at the end. And I think it's very sad that that was like the only redeeming factor. I think him in the maze was something.
How did you interpret the picture at the end? I'm curious.
I saw it as all fallen victims of the hotel. Those who can't fall into it, and they now become part of those who will haunt anyone who comes in next.
Including Jack.
Yeah. I see him haunting someone in the future because he's in there. He's in the picture. He's part of it. I think all those who have been killed. It's the expansion of 1408, essentially, isn't it? That hotel. It's like the whole thing is kind of messed. But it just didn't work for me. It just didn't.
I think it's just a suggestion. You know, sometimes the Coen brothers are especially guilty of this. You know, you watch a movie like Hail Caesar. I needed, when I first saw Hail Caesar, to go and do some, call it extracurricular reading, to be like, there's a movie here, and I know I missed some stuff. Please explain Hail Caesar. Explain this scene in Hail Caesar. Explain the ending in Hail Caesar. And then you read it, and you're like, oh, yeah, that actually does make sense. Okay, looking at it through this lens, now I actually really like this film. Might I advocate you going to do a bit of that with The Shining? Because it is a superb film, dude.
I'm intrigued. Like, partially, there's a part of me that even questioned if I should read the book. There's a lot behind The Shining that I'm intrigued. This is the problem. Not that there's a bad thing in reading. Guys, we do talk films, but yes, do pick up a book. Train your brain. But, yeah, maybe it's a bit of research followed by a review. And look, before we pressed record, we were talking about our appreciation for The Godfather growing. Like, first viewing for both of us is something we didn't enjoy. This is a one-time watch for me. It is actually a one-time watch, and maybe I could appreciate it more. But then there is another factor that we also discussed pre-recorded. I'm not too sure how much of a Kubrick fan I am. I know, get the guns out for AJ today, but yeah. Yeah, it's just the way of it. But who knows? I'm willing to give anything another shot.
So that was my three, so you're two.
So it was the punt from earlier. Stand by me.
Of course, we know what your number one is then. Yeah. Stand by Me is amazing, dude. The greatest coming-of-age movie ever made.
Yeah, look, do you know what? It nearly, very, very nearly made my number one. I'm not going to lie. I don't know. There was something that just tipped the number one. But the story, as you said, it's just this, it's a coming of age. It's a journey. It's a friendship. It's a bond. And it's just different angles and ways people's lives go based off of, you know, one event and how you handle it and what becomes your future. And what I also love is, these are kids who've made the movie. You know, we can all look back at Home Alone as a great child movie and XYZ. But when you look at child stars, these are some very, like, it could have been a lot more. Sadly, none of them became anything. I mean, River Phoenix probably being the standout, and he sadly passed away.
Will Wheaton did Star Trek.
No, but this is what I'm saying. But yeah, but what is Will Wheaton short of Star Trek, The Big Bang? Like, they joke about who Will Wheaton is later on, you know? In terms of it, everyone became a TV star. And I think River Phoenix potentially had the potential to be the movie star, but was taken away.
River Phoenix should have been the next James Dean, and it never, you know, got killed, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that was it. But there's something very sweet and redeeming about it. You know, it's a father telling his kids a story, and it's just something of his childhood. And it's just sweet and warming. And this is, again, going back to what I say, Grounded King, I'm all for. All day long, I'm for it. You don't need no supernatural in this. And you've got a nice story. There's a bit of a what if, what happened, and, you know, yeah, accountability. Dude,
Not only Grounded King, I'd build on that. You know, I often lambast him for going to the, I find it tried and tested, another small white picket fence town. This scenario, it works.
Yeah.
For the story we're trying to tell, the setting of a white picket small town works perfectly here.
Yeah.
The story's really good. I love the way that you get natural exposition about each of the kids and, you know, kind of who they are through, you know, just the natural denouement of the movie. I thought they each had a really unique, engaging background. I like, you know, the song they had. It's just a nice film, despite ultimately being quite morbid, because... Yeah. Mother Flubber is going to look for a dead body. It's like, oh, exactly. Okay.
Yeah.
But it's a story about companionship. And it's one of those things where I think anyone would look at and be like, oh, I wish I'd had like something like that, you know,
yeah,
when I was growing up. Being able to just go with four buddies off on an adventure for a few days. You can't do that anymore.
No, and it's a dying art. As every generation comes, it's just less and less of a thing, and it's sad. It really is.
Well, it's the dangers. It's the fact that we're all on our phones now. It's the fact that a lot of us, you know, live in the big cities. Not all. I mean, I don't live in a big city anymore, but it's very, very much a nice time capsule, this movie. I really like it for that. Cool. So that was your two. So my two. Okay. Just say punt.
Yeah, I'm sure. Punt. It's obvious. Yeah. It's obvious because it can't be not. There's no way it's not on the list. Put it that way. Yeah.
Exactly. Your worst. I have a feeling we're going to have the same worst.
So is it in relation to your number 10?
Yes.
Yeah. So this again, I know that we could talk about rewatching, and I'm going to put the poster up now. But
piece of shit.
Yeah, now I'm going to be honest. I've already seen the first 20 minutes of this film. It was the minute I saw Pennywise in the sewer, sure, and he's tempting this kid to come in, and the voice was irritating, the teeth was just ridiculous, and I thought, for all the hype that people talk about this film, this isn't for me. And I've never felt so negative about a film as I did with this one, to just be like, I can't remember what we were doing as an episode, but me putting that on, and I went, there are too many films I want to see, and this is not one of them. This is a waste of my time. And I locked off. And I've not ever been tempted to turn back. I know there's meant to be...
Never do.
An element of, like, chapter two is meant to be quite interesting, but...
Chapter two is remarkably even worse.
I'm disappointed to hear that, but honestly... It took that opening moment of just seeing the villain instantly to go, I'm going to hate this film. I have never, ever, ever, I don't believe, done that with any other film. And I know some people, again, I'm willing to hear it in the comments. Give it another try. Keep watching. If anyone can tell me keep watching, it gets better, you can. If you tell me it stays at that same flow, I'll never give that film another shot.
It stays at the same flow.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what annoys me with the teeth and the creepiness that they were going for. What they do that made absolutely no sense to me is that then halfway through the movie, they start. I've mentioned this to you before, the rock fight down at the creek. They start doing these slow-mo Scooby-Doo moments. And you're like, but what tone are you going for here? Like, you're going for this kind of extroverted horror compared to the original with Tim Curry. You're upping up the tension and the horror here. You're making it a bit more violent. You're making Pennywise hit harder. It's not working for me, but I get that's what you're going for. Why are we doing a slow-mo rock fight with a kid literally going, what are we doing? Pick a tone, man.
I really don't think I'll ever enjoy that. Like, I don't think I'm going to go back to it anyway. But
do you remember Pet Detective, in Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, yeah, when they check him into the asylum, you know, full
scene, yeah,
yeah, and he's like, well, I can do football in super slow mo, and he goes,
yeah.
You remember all of that, yeah? So they start doing things like that in the movie, that level, and it's not meant to be comedic. And I'm like, but it doesn't fit. Why have you made this decision? I don't understand why you've made this creative decision. And it's one of those things where when you see it, there is no unseeing it. Some people just kind of took it and were like, whatever, move on. I saw it and I was like, oh, you are so betraying the tone you're going for here. That's unforgivable.
Yeah. No. I just did not feel for me. I honestly believe, and again, I've never done it. Never. If I was in the cinema, I think I would have got up and walked. I think that would have been my walkout.
Cinema was an interesting experience with it because there was a lot of hype going into this movie, and so that hype was what was making me curious. I was like, okay.
Then I don't know if I would have left.
Huh?
And now I'm thinking about, I don't know if I would have left because I think it would get better, and then I just walked out really disappointed.
Yeah, well, that's what happened to me. I kind of was like, I'm like, okay. It's going to get better. It's going to get better. They got some good kid actors in this. They got the kid from Stranger Things in this. There's some really violent moments. They're not shying away like they did in the Tim Curry movie. It's going to get better. It's going to get better. Nope.
Yeah.
Dum-dum.
Ah, okay.
I hope Bill Skarsgård ends up being better as the Crow than he is as Pennywise.
I can only even pray for that. Okay, so that was a joint worst. So you want my number one?
See, I mean, we've both got a Frank Darabont movie at number one.
Yeah, yeah. Shawshank Redemption. Do you know, I think the only reason it outdone Stand By Me is because I've seen it more. Honestly, I think that's the only reason.
Oh, so you really rate Stand By Me, huh?
Oh, God, yeah. I think it's a beautiful film. I think it's a very beautiful film. It really is.
To be the only reason Shawshank outdoes it, that's huge props for Stand By Me.
I think it's a really good film, but there's something about Shawshank, and I've always heard, like, don't get me wrong, Shawshank is not or will never be my favourite film of all time. I know it's one of those films that is very popular.
For a lot of people.
This is it. No, don't get me wrong, and I can understand why. I think the story is absolutely amazing of this accountant who's been wronged and is being manipulated by the prison guards, and he's slowly plotting what he's doing and the friendship he builds. And it was a very... It's an easy watch. You can follow the journey, and this is what I love with it. You know, to say it could be a favorite movie, I just think it's a bit of an overhype because I'm like, I get the story, but it's not that you need to be groundbreaking, but there's no wow moment to it to be like that.
Oh, I do not agree with you there at all. The wow is the escape. It is so great.
Yeah, listen, the escape is very clever. The escape is very clever, but is that favorite movie territory for an escape?
I understand why it would be. It's proper holy shib stuff.
Listen, do you know what it is? What I love about The Escape is, I was like, so that's what you were doing. Like, you know, with every other thing, as I said, sometimes you see it in a film. There was not a chance in hell I understood what posters meant. I was just completely, okay. And that it was there. But it's got a beautiful ending, you know? For all of that, there was this bond of loyalty that's there throughout there between, oh, God, what is his name? Tim Robbins and Morgan Freeman, you know? It was just a great take of a film for, you know, prison movies can be really awkward. They could either be hyper-violent, they could be ultra-dramatic. There are different angles to it. And you've got something like this, which is just a journey. It's legitimately just a journey for me. It's like a more serious version of life to a degree. Like you're just following it from this point, and you just follow them through the time, and you just see the different elements, and you see a screw job here and there, and how you adapt to the new people who come up. And I just, yeah. Again, it's weird because when I always think of Stephen King, I always picture horror. So this, when I first found out it was a King as well, threw me off. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, interesting. And this was the first time I realized that Stephen King doesn't always have to be scary. And it was just
He's so
great
much
work.
better when he's not.
Yeah, 100%. Hands down is a lot better. And yeah, that's why this one got my number one.
And for very similar reasons is why mine got not only my number one, but I consider my favorite movie of all time, and that is The Green Mile.
Bro, I say it again. It probably would have been my number one. Okay, Stand By Me being where it is and what have you. The spewing
I know, you can't handle
really,
it.
really. But again, this it's weird because the super. Huh? Yeah, sorry,
I'm
trying
here.
to. The supernatural that you get in this, I'm willing to accept. It's the part where you had to show that. I think there's
Yeah,
101
it's
different ways it could have ended.
the realization of the supernatural. You're not a fan of it. I get it. I get it. It's aesthetically, it wasn't aesthetically pleasing to you. I get it. And that's fair. That's fair. If the aesthetics for it didn't work for you, it worked for me profoundly. Just on the spewing, I just interpreted that as the miracle. And here's me being the non-religious guy going a bit religious. It was the miracle being cleansing and it coming out almost like the plagues of Egypt, the flies and the locusts. That's and it was them just dissipating. Because that's what we're full of. We have all this bad stuff around us. It worked for taking all of that religious hokey pokey stuff out of the way. On a basic human level, this movie is such a masterpiece, dude. Like the performances from Tom Hanks and James Cromwell, and frickin' my boy, man. Oh, why am I blanking? Name
Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell, thank you, Jesus. He's so good in this.
But going back to it, this is the film that I said I'd hold back to on religion. Do you not say that this is the film that says he is quite a religious person? Because he's literally written
Yes,
about the
thinking of
incident.
it, yes, absolutely. But I'm like, so where do you stand on this mother flubber? Like, are you pro or anti? Or are you kind
Because
of like
this is the
on
one
the
that will tell me he's mega and mega pro religion, because he's the whole karma, the entity, the punishment for killing God's
Well,
greatest gift to the end,
the
the
miracle,
miracle
right?
as it were.
It breaks me every time I watch it. It's been a long time since I've seen it now, I'm ashamed to say. Since I've been with my wife, we're 10 years together now. Not married 10 years, but we've been together 10 years. She's known this is my favorite movie, and she knows it makes me cry every time, and she's like, I don't know if I'm ready to watch it yet. And it's like, you gotta get it.
No.
We still haven't watched it together. She's like, no, it's gotta be a special moment. We gotta hold off on it. I want it to be a big deal when I see your favorite movie. And I'm like, what's the fuck? What's the damn movie? Because I used to have a rule where I would watch it every year. Once a year, every year, I would watch The Green Mile, have a good old cry, and just appreciate how sometimes people are forced to make decisions that they don't want to make, and that can haunt them for life. That is it. I don't know why that works for me. I don't know what traumas I've been through in my life that movie affects me so profoundly, but it hits me so hard, dude. And it's just and it, for a movie to affect me like that is why it just every single time I watch it, I'm like, yep, that's why you're my favorite. It gets me every time.
Nice, nice.
Rushmore.
Look, it's a beautiful story. It's never hit me that hard, but it is a beautiful story. I would never take that from it. The Green Mile, honestly, again, just.
Percy is a see you next Tuesday. Percy,
Oh,
what is
yeah. But that's the
Tuesday?
thing. Like, if you talk about emotions and you look at prison life, and again, the journey through that, the people who come and go through this, the friendships that are built, this larger than, well, larger than life, I mean, he actually was there, but this monster of a man with the heart of gold, willing to
Gentle
do
giant.
everything, like everything about it. You know, and this is just literally people on death row. The Green Mile is the walk up to the electric chair. But the relationships that can happen from there, where you start to see people as humans, even though they are prisoners and they've done wrong, you know, them regretting what they've done. There is so much. And in that, there is so much depth that outdoes anything Shawshank does. I have to be honest with that. But it's the aesthetics that kill it for me. It's sad that I would let it knock back a film for me, but it just really hurt me. And the more I saw it, like if I saw it once, I would have been like, what was that about? But it kept happening and I was just like, ugh.
It's that aesthetic is not for you, it bothers you. But the chemistry between Clark Duncan, R.I.P. by Hanks. The way, big guy, yeah. And Tom Hanks is it's god level.
Yeah,
it really is greatness on another level.
Yeah, no, I agree. Right, so it's Rushmore time.
Shawshank's not in because it can't be. Every time we put Shawshank on a list of anything, it storms it.
Right.
That's it's fine. A cancelled movie.
Okay, let's go. Bear me a second. Right, so Green Mile.
Yes.
Stand By Me.
Yes.
Running Man.
Maybe.
Okay.
Go on, give me The Shining.
Oh, you're taking the absolute.
Give me The Shining. Come on.
I mean, Misery's got higher ranking for us. This is like middle ground.
It's middle ground for us both, and Shining's my top three. So.
Oh.
Go on, give me The Shining. Give me The Shining, and then you can pick fourth spot.
You see, I'd be interested to see what people say. No, because I think once they realise that Running Man is a king, that would be it. I don't know where Running... I'll give you The Shining because it's just, like, canon. I'll give it to you. And I'll throw Misery in there because that is known as a king movie.
You're putting Misery in there, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, the official movie Mount Rushmore of Stephen King adaptations, in no particular order, is
The Green Mile.
Our second entry is
Stand By Me.
Our third entry is
The Shining. The excitement in my voice.
Our final entry into the movie Mount Rushmore of Stephen King adaptations is
Misery. That's a very good list, you know. I think
it is a very good list.
When you break it down, I don't think The Running Man would have the rights to be in such contention.
No.
Yeah. Okay, guys. So now you know what to do. You head on over to at Movie MT Rushmore, the official X page of the Silver Screen Dudes, or more importantly, the person retweet. Good old JT of We Love Movies at Movie Polls for You. You only get to vote once because it's a retweet, so no cheating. And there you will have the four contenders vying to be the best Stephen King adaptation. And guess what? It sure as hell ain't it. So there we go. Head on over, get your votes in, and the winner will be announced next week. Yeah, next week.
And as promised, guys, if you can believe it. What's funny is that, this episode probably, okay, we're going to need to discuss this. But at time of recording, it's the 25th of October. Usually the episode we record them releases a week later. However, a week later, a week later is our first live show on the new channel.
Yeah.
The message will go out on Twitter later this week, but we're hoping a lot of old people will come back and support our live show. It should be a lot of fun. AJ, you have questions?
No, it just hit me. Our first live show is a Halloween show.
Interesting. It's great, isn't it?
Spooktacular.
So I guess this one will probably... Here's going to be a weird bit of meta time travel for you. If you're watching this till the end, firstly, thank you. Or listening till the end, firstly, thank you. But this episode will likely have come out before the live show. Sorry, after the live show. Even though it was recorded before the live show, but it's going to release after the live show. because we normally release a week later, but then on the day that this would release, the live show will be going live, so there's no need to schedule it, and oh god, I've gone cross-eyed. Anyway, past Nick says hi to future Nico.
Hey.
Future sounds from the silver screens. We hope you enjoyed our live show last week. By the way, we had a live show last week.
But we're planning for it. Do you know what? We don't even know what made the Rushmore, because guess what? We haven't built it yet.
Yes, the live show is back, people, and we hope you will all be there to join us. Stay tuned to Twitter, or if you were on Twitter, thank you for joining us on our live show that aired last week, this week, next week.
And my whole opening of "and our contenders last week were" is an absolute lie. So ignore me too.
We're going to leave it on that fun note, guys. We're looking forward to doing the live show again. And if it was the live show last week and you were there with us, thank you. Yay. This has been really confusing. We will see you. Is it next week or at the time of recording?
We'll see you last week.
We'll see. Yes, we'll see you last week. Very good. We out, guys. See ya.